In the run-up to this weekend's Limud, we have over the past few weeks been chatting with a whole host of presenters, some of who are coming out from Israel and elsewhere, and some of whom are local. And just reminding you that there's over 130 speakers. On the line now is one of them, a local speaker, Jules Feldman, who is a storyteller and a member of Authority of Kibbutz. Now, he is a passionate historian and, as I mentioned, a storyteller who has dedicated years to uncovering the remarkable tales of Jerusalem's past. And at this weekend's Limud, he'll be talking about legendary families of the 19th century. And he's been delving into the lives of legendary families who in the 19th century helped shape Jerusalem's identity, culture, and spirit. From merchants and spiritual leaders to philanthropists and visionaries, these families played a pivotal role in transforming Jerusalem into the city we know today. Jules, thanks so much for joining us on the line. And I'm very curious to ask you, what first drew you to explore the stories of Jerusalem's legendary families from the 19th century?
Okay, firstly, I want to correct you. I was local once. I'm a Johannesburg-born boy, but I've been living in Israel for the last 54 years.
Oh, that's quite a correction. You know, sometimes when someone says to me, Paula, I want to correct you, my heart always stops and I think, what did I get wrong in the intro? So, okay, we're still going to claim you as one of our own, but 54 years certainly makes you an Israeli as well.
Right. So what got me involved?
What drew you to the topic?
My wife is a Rivlin. So when I got involved in writing up the family tree, after I'd written up my small South African family, my mother-in-law pushed into my book. She pushed into my hands a book that was written in 1940 with about 4,000 names of the Rivlins. And going back, my wife is the 16th generation.
Now, is she related to Reuven Riblin, the previous president of Israel?
Right. He's a seventh cousin.
Seventh cousin. Wow. Did you uncover that in the genealogy?
That's that I covered over the years, yeah. And at any rate, I got going and I started discovering that in the family tree, there were some people written in 1940. There were a few people I actually knew. And one telephone led to another. And within a few years, I'd already picked up about 50,000 names, and over the years it's reached close to 100,000.
And this is all on the Rivlin side?
This is all on the Rivlin side.
Aside from the Rivlins, and of course, please continue.
And of course, a family tree is a list of names, but behind the names are stories. And I picked up a fair number of stories, and that's what I'll be talking about.
Can you share one or two of those stories?
Well, I'll share something that's not quite to do with the Jerusalem Rivlins, but it's a Rivlin story all the same. I put in touch with each other two old ladies, one of who at the time was 92, the other one was 80, who hadn't seen each other for 72 years.
Wow.
And two Rivlins. The family, their branch of the family was actually from Riga. And the one had left with her parents as a young kid for 1934 for London, where her father then was a doctor. And the other one had stayed in Riga, had managed to flee to Central Asia during the war. And after the war, got back to Riga and then left Latvia for Germany in the 70s. But she'd never been able to find the cousins.
And
I put the two of them in touch.
How did you know to put them in touch? How did you know that they were looking for each other, presumably?
So the question was how I got to the lady in Germany. I was looking up a branch of the family that lived in Riga, and I checked the pages of testimony of Yad Vashem, and I found her name there. And this was 20 more years ago, and you could still find people alive. And I managed to trace her phone number. I phoned her up. There was a difficulty because she didn't speak English. So I found a German speaker on the kibbutz. And she spoke to her. And she said to me, "You must speak to my son." When I spoke to her son, he said to me the most incredible, made the most incredible statement. He said, "I don't know how to talk to you because I've never spoken to a relative in my life."
what an interesting sentence to say. Okay.
And I said to him, "Well, you've got a few thousand at least." And
and then he really didn't know what to say.
And then I put him in touch with his relatives in England and New Zealand and so on. And a few months later, his mother and her cousin in England met. And he said it was an incredible experience. The two old ladies talking 72 years later, and suddenly coming up with family foibles that of 70 years before.
Well, you know what they say Jewish Alzheimer's is? You forget everything except the foibles, right? So this is exactly right. Evidence of that. Jules, aside from the families themselves, how did they impact Jerusalem, and how did Jerusalem grow and develop and forge its identity because of these families?
Well, take into account that until the till about the 1830s, there were almost no Ashkenazim in Jerusalem, and there was a reason for it. The Ashkenazim in Jerusalem had gone bankrupt in the 18th century, and the debt had been left, and any Ashkenazi who appeared was immediately demanded of him that he pay it. So the few Ashkenazim that there were dressed like Sfaradim, pretended they were Sfaradim, took on Sfaradi names, and that was the case until about 1837.
That's in 1837,
there was an earthquake in Svat, and about 1,800 people died, most of them Jewish, the same in Tiberias, another 600, and the Jews of Svat felt it was time to leave, and they moved to Jerusalem. And so if you ask the specific contribution of the Rivlins, the first Jew to live outside the walls of the city was Yosef Yosher Rivlin. And he was, by the way, a great-grandfather of Ruby Rivlin.
And that would have been in the early 1800s?
No, actually, I've got it wrong here. Of Ruby, he was married to Ruby Rivlin's great-grandmother. But that's a story on its own. But when he left when he went to live outside the walls of Jerusalem, everybody was scared that he'd be murdered. So the following morning, there was a whole delegation that went to see if he was alive or not. And they tell about him that since this continued, he tried to get people to stay for coffee until the gates of Jerusalem were closed. And then they couldn't get home.
And did he succeed?
And then they could report that it was safe to live outside the old city.
So did he succeed in that? Did they stay till the gates were closed?
Well, there were others who joined him, and slowly but surely Jerusalem was built.
And was this in that neighborhood, Mishkanot Sha'anim, if I'm not mistaken?
There was Mishkanot Sha'anim, yeah.
Fascinating. Jules, I could keep you on the line forever, but I think a better way of ending this is for me saying I'm definitely coming to listen to you this weekend, and for anybody who's curious about a journey back in time. 8 o'clock on Saturday morning. Perfect. Jules, thank you. And I love that story about no Ashkenazim in Jerusalem, and perhaps we can chat another time about that and some of the other wonderful tales coming out of the capital city.
Yeah.
So 8 o'clock, 8 o'clock Sunday morning or Saturday morning? Saturday morning.
Saturday morning.
8 o'clock Saturday morning, the legendary families of the 19th century of Jerusalem. And that is Jules Feldman, a storyteller and a member of Authority of Kibbutz on on what he's going to be talking about this coming weekend at Limud. Sounds fascinating and well worth waking up early.